at Tom in here. And Tom's going to be all depressed. He's going to be depressed and not because of the Seahawks yesterday.
I think he's had some time to recover. It was an afternoon game, not an evening at least.
Let's see. Let me just open the other door and look at him. Hold on. Yeah, he looks okay. Get in here, Tommy! Come on in!
Sick to my stomach,
oh, no,
I am.
I didn't see that. Diving in!
That could have been a season-defining game.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Oh, my. Wow. This is squarely. Is this the way you're going to be the whole show?
I hope not, John. It's your job to cheer me up.
Well, no one cheers up anybody like Hannah talking about COVID. Those distorted numbers, Hannah Scott.
Yeah. Always my favorite.
Give me those cases. Give me those case numbers, the ones that we know about. We should use the word reported cases.
I do.
I know you do. Others don't. But anyway, it doesn't matter. So Governor Inslee went on. I don't know who was watching him at 11 o'clock in the morning on Sunday. Probably
me.
I know you. I'm just
going to
say. Okay, Tom, we're going to start naming everybody.
Some of my friends.
How about Steve James?
Everybody. I've got an ex-boyfriend from when I was 18 years old. I'm not even joking. He lives somewhere on the other part of the state. I don't know where he is, but He's somewhere here. He sent me a Facebook message because he heard my question. I haven't heard from the guy in like 15 years.
Wow. They say Facebook rekindles a lot of old relationships.
I know.
What was the question? Did you ask about him?
No, oh, okay. I did not. I was like, it's fine. I said, it's weird, right? And then I was busy. I had stuff to do.
But, hold on a second. Before we get into it.
Let me check my calendar.
Yeah, hold on a second. Why'd you break up with him? Just want to know that.
Oh, wow. That is, in all honesty, probably not something I want to share on the air.
Good for you, Anna.
Yeah. Well, it was my choice.
No, Tom, don't let her get off that easily. Hang on. Hold on. I'm going to open her up like a soft peanut.
I don't know if he's listening. I can't say. I'll tell you in secret sometime.
I'm sure he is.
I asked Sean for romantic music. This is what he pulls up.
Hey, I don't understand.
That's on the fly. Romanticism on the fly, buddy.
Let's hear it.
Yeah, sounds like the Love Boat.
Now, this would be why Hannah broke up with the 18-year-old.
That's like an Ocean's 11
beat. Yeah, come on.
What's going on?
Moving on. All right. Okay. So the governor speaks at 11 o'clock on Sunday morning and says, hey, we're going to lock everything down just like we did back in March, even though
not
that didn't
happen.
Not quite. Okay, good.
Not quite. So here, first of all, there was a long lead-in into a lot of the why of it. So here's what he started off with yesterday.
Today, November 15th, 2020, I have to report to Washingtonians, is the most dangerous public health day in over 100 years in our state's great history. It is troublesome, but I must report that we have a pandemic raging across our state, abroad across our state, that is a potentially fatal disease. Left unchecked, it will assuredly result in grossly overburdened hospitals. It will keep people from receiving routine but necessary medical treatment because of the stresses our hospitals will be under. Left unchecked, the economic devastation long term will be continually prolonged. And most importantly, left unchecked, we will see continued untold numbers of deaths. We will not allow these things to happen.
So that's the prelude. And then you get Dr. Kathy Lofi, the state health officer, came in with the numbers.
During the past 2 weeks, the number of cases reported each day in our state has more than doubled from about 1,000 cases reported per day to more than 2,200 cases reported per day. If that doubling time continues, in two more weeks, we'll be seeing over 4,000 cases per day. Especially concerning is that during the past week, the number of patients currently in our hospitals with COVID-19 increased about 40%.
You know what percentages? Percentages don't tell us anything. 40%
But
is
the
what,
number,
right?
The key number there was that exponential growth, because they are seeing more hospitalizations. She said it was close to 40% increase in just the last 7 days.
Right. That's there's 1,390 ICU beds in the state of Washington. 46 of them right now, as of today, are taken up. Non-COVID, 46% non-COVID. 751 still remaining. 21% will be COVID cases, and the majority of those will also survive COVID compared to March of this year.
Perhaps you are right about that. They will need the ICU beds, though, and they think the trajectory now is farther than we were back in March. It's not what's already happened. It's what will happen if you don't act. So this is the thing, and I've got to set you up for this. I feel like I said this to you on Friday, too. If it's successful, this early action, that's the other thing he kept hammering on yesterday, is we know, everybody says, that if you act early and aggressive, as he did the first time when we really didn't see that huge, you know, New York kind of situation, that's when we know we've succeeded, when we don't see that. So there's no payoff. You don't see a visual payoff other than, you know, you get to go back to normal, hopefully, at some point. But that is what they're pointing at right now, because the trajectory and the steepness of their, you know, curve and their incline of cases and ICU beds and deaths and hospitalizations are all going at an incline rate that they are extremely uncomfortable with.
But this is not news, Hannah, because Tom said this in April. That when the second wave comes around, when we all go back inside again, then we will see this go, plus also the flu. You combine these two things, we'll see it. So all we did back in March, we hit our peak March 27th, was that we flattened the curve just like he asked us to, so we didn't overwhelm the infrastructure, so it stayed flat. For every three people that died, another person died as a result of known as excessive mortality, which is drugs, alcohol, suicide. So we have all that going on. We flatten the curve, all flat. Summer, we all go out, run around, do our thing. Those people that are protesting Black Lives Matter, that's okay. Those that are protesting the government, not okay. And we roll up. Now we're inside. As we go inside, we don't have the same sort of circulation. We don't have the heat from the sun killing the virus on surfaces. So now we're all in there. We knew this was coming. Knew the number of cases would increase, right?
We did know that the number of cases would increase. I don't believe that they thought it would increase by quite this much and quite this fast.
So we didn't really eradicate it. We've never eradicated the virus. No.
Nobody said that we did.
Oh, but that was the idea back when he kept telling us in May that we're gonna pound this thing and pound it and pound it so we don't have it anymore. All we did was hide from it. Now we're going to hide from it again. And we're going to wait.
Until a vaccine.
So we're going to hide until February.
Look, I asked one medical expert today. I said, what do you think? What's your gut tell you about moving forward? Are these kind of restrictions going to be wrapped up come December 14th when they end? Or is this how we are until the vaccine? And he said, expect a really dark winter. There's really nothing to do until you get through the winter.
We'll see. We're going to hide till the vaccine's available.
That's been the general idea, I think, all along. And I just think that what we're seeing right now is not as... It's too high. It's much higher than they thought it would be, much sooner than they thought it would be, and it's moving much faster than they thought it would be. And it will just take a couple of weeks before we do catch up to the cases that we've seen, these 2,000 a day. I think it was the last 3 days, 7,700 cases almost combined over that three-day period, a record set each day. It's a lag, right? So a week or two out is when you're going to see those hospitalizations and deaths and all of that play out, and however they break down among age groups. All of the medical people that I've been talking to all week say you must understand that it's not just the older people. There's young people, there's long-term effects, there's all these other things. But the bottom line is, I think the governor said yesterday, if you need a hip replacement or a heart surgery or anything like that, if the COVID patients overwhelm the hospitals, then you're not going to be able to get them. And I think, as I told you last week, it's the same everywhere right now. So there's no hospitals to send anybody to nearby that are out of state.
Okay.
Yeah, we're back to I don't know if it's square one, but like square 1B maybe.
Oh, yes.
Because we now have to flatten the curve again. The flatten the curve was to make sure we didn't overwhelm the hospitals, and now we're on the cusp of maybe overwhelming the hospitals again. So we are kind of going over old ground. The question I have, so one of the things that we supposedly have learned, we, the scientific community, society, government, everything, is that we now know more about the disease or the illness than we did 6-8 months ago. So how is it that this lockdown differs from the lockdown in the spring? Supposedly it's more targeted. what was targeted this time and what wasn't, you know, included in what was part of the lockdown back in the spring?
It's the ratios, I guess, are going to be what's going to be different and what's going to be targeted. So what you saw, I'll try to do this all from memory. Let's see. So you have a you have all in-store retail, including grocery stores, limited to 25% capacity. That is similar to what we had before for regular in-store retail, but actually phase one, the initial lockdown, shut down in-store retail altogether. But grocery stores were essential, so they could keep going. And they were not ever cut down to 25%. So the governor said that they were at 30%, which I don't know. My Safeway wasn't like that. They were very full recently. But at any rate, it's now 25% across the board there. What's really targeted here is the restaurants and the bars, because they have no indoor service. And that is a crushing, crushing blow for the restaurant industry.
That's the end of it.
Yeah, there's going to be there's restaurants that are not going to make it. They barely came out of the last lockdown, and they're not going to make this one. And it's not that much easier for bartenders. Just see if Jacob can follow along. Listen to these bartenders I talked to yesterday. They barely made it through the last one.
I have not heard of one customer here that has had it. I don't think that it's fair to shut us down. There's no way. It's gathering in their homes.
My base unemployment is $200 a week.
See?
It's like she's $229. I want people to be safe, but I also need to pay rent.
I don't know that I'll have a job to come back to, and it scares me.
And they're not the only ones that I've talked to who are saying those same things. So it's tough. But if you go right above Jacob, there's Dr. Nathan Schlicker with the State Medical Association. He explains why that order was necessary.
I do. The indoor aspect, and when we take our masks off to eat and drink in confined spaces, we've seen those outbreaks in the healthcare setting as well. It's not just the restaurant setting. Because the reality is the virus doesn't take time off for us to eat. It exploits our weaknesses and the moments when we're not masked up. And I grieve for everyone that's losing their job. We need to support our small businesses. If you can still pay your gym membership, even though you're not going, do it. If you can go take takeout, please do. We all need to rally together to help keep everybody in their employment and in their line of work as whole as we can.
And Tom, to get back to your original question, the other differences are originally in the original lockdown, all of the weddings, funerals, and religious services were not allowed.
Oh, that's
now it's different. Now you can have weddings and funerals, but you can't have receptions. You can have just the services with up to 30 people. Yeah. The religious services are 25% capacity, no more than 200 people, no singing, no choir, no anything like that. I think you can have a soloist, but it's the aerosol, the droplets and things that they worry about there. And so it is more targeted. They spent some time, and perhaps it'll get somewhat more targeted, but it's going to be a very major blow to the economy, which the governor said he was working on, hopefully.
Yeah. Let's talk about deaths, because ultimately that's what we're trying to do, is save people. Because ultimately, and don't bring in, there's long-term. I'm going to just say straight
that's
up.
That's what I got to him just yesterday.
Straight up deaths.
Okay.
Straight up death. So first of all, I'll correct the governor. 1918, we'll go back to the flu. The total population in the state of Washington was 1.3 million. 5,000 people died. And 95% of them were between the age of 22 and 46. This, we know who this kills. We absolutely know who this is most likely to kill, don't we? Do we all agree on that?
I don't think so.
Well,
I think it's older people.
Hold on. Do we not agree that if you're 10 years old, you're not going to die of this compared to if you're 75 years old?
I would agree with that.
You have a 2 in 100 chance of the age of 75 of dying of COVID, but COVID also not being the primary primary reason for your death. It'd be comorbidity. There'd be two things that would kill you. It'd be COVID and diabetes, COVID and heart. So if you're 75, you got a 2 in 100 chance.
I can tell you.
If you're 40 years old, you've got about a 2 in 1,000 chance of dying it. So there's a series of risks that go into this. So this is not about cases, because we don't know how many. All we know is the case is tested and proven. There are people that are walking around asymptomatic, and they think it could be anywhere between 25 and 10 times the amount. So the cases are relevant. What is known that we know, death and we know who it is most likely to kill, and we know who is most likely to go into the hospital.
Who's most likely to get in the car accident and need that hospital when it's full of COVID patients?
Absolutely.
And there's no one to take them.
Right.
That's the point they're trying to make. Because those people are going to die.
Right. So let's do this. The people that are going to die are going to be people that are going to get it. The people that are going to die and people that are going to get it are going to be a certain age, and they're going to have contributing factors to that. Why doesn't society, and that would mean the governor would have to actually have two thoughts in his head at the exact same time rattling around. And one of them is this: protect the most vulnerable. We put kids in car seats because they are vulnerable. DHSS checks on foster care kids because they are vulnerable. This is the vulnerable part of society. You have a secondary condition and you are of a certain age. There's a pretty good chance you'll catch it and you'll go into the hospital and you'll take up that bed for a car accident victim would need, right? So we can see this thing coming down the road. We hid from this. We knew it was still in place, but we hid from it, and then we kept talking about, oh, this is it. We're coming through. We're getting through it. No, we're not. All we did was hide from it. Now we're in our house, and now you're going to destroy jobs again. You're going to destroy lives again. You'll increase alcoholism, and you're going to see drugs and suicides, and all of those numbers will continue. And the 25-year-old guy that I've been talking about since March, who is in good health and can get over it, he's out of work. And I don't hear anybody in a position of power addressing the 30-year-old guy that is of good health and is most likely not to die of this. But
now,
his life is ruined as well, while we know who this is going to affect and we know everything else about the disease. We're all going to hide in place until the vaccine comes out. Moronic! Lockdowns kill people. Period. Exclamation point. That's a fact.
I want to go mic drop and let you close this one out.
Please don't.
Thank you, Hannah.
That's what the stimulus program we're supposed to be getting from the Congress is designed to do. Mm-hmm. And that's what's going to have to happen. The governor has said that he's going to dedicate, I think, $50 million to, you know, small businesses to help employers and employees. That's where we need to step forward.
Dude, just hand out money.
The MPS.
Dude, to
the
everybody.
Impact.
Right. Why not spend that money?
Everybody who's impacted, yes. And that's what they did in the spring, and it was bipartisan effect. Bipartisan support. That's what I think we need to do to mitigate that, so you can do both things. Help the vulnerable and make sure that the people that are impacted by this, the businesses, small and large, but mostly small we're concerned about because the bigger industries seem to be doing better, is to help them out. And hopefully we'll get through this. The vaccine, if we have the vaccine widespread by spring, this can be solved.
Okay. Tracy Taylor, by the way, Tracy did an auction on Saturday. I saw her.
I certainly
did. Yes, you were in there raising money. How was that?
It was so much fun for the Seattle Animal Shelter Foundation. Yes. So, it was great. Got to play with some puppies and everything.
They're trying to find me a dog.
Oh, they are?
Mm-hmm. Jacob says
fantastic.
A two-legger. He's saying, yes, you did. You called for a two-legger. I want the two-legger with the cart and the snow tires on the back. All right. All righty, Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-7-7-8-K-I-E-L, doing great things in the community. Working from home, I'm assuming everybody there at Kiel Mortgage wants to make sure that the mortgage for you is as painless as possible. The pre-approval letter lets the realtor and the seller know that you are serious because you're working with the best mortgage company anywhere. That's Kiel Mortgage, 1-888-7-7-8-K-I-E-L. I was talking to Rye yesterday. He was watching the Eagles game, Tom, and Merrill Reese, who's been doing the Eagles play-by-play since 1974, he is so disgusted with the Eagles. But then he had to do it. So he goes like this, and that'll be it. Eagles will have to punt again. And then you can hear him like, ugh. And then he goes, hey, folks, if you want to have a good time, head on out to Shippy's restaurant. He couldn't have been more depressed. And he had to go into and the reader was like, your whole family will have a ball. Make sure the kids come and smiles on everyone's faces when you go to Chivy's restaurant on 4th and Broad. He's just a worn out.
We should be grateful that Steve Rabel didn't have to do many commercials because he was awfully deflated in his call for the game as well.
did you, by the way, I can't listen to him. How do I listen to him? It won't come up on my radio.
So, yes, I think it's a contract thing, but you, if you download the Seahawks app, that allows you to have access to the Cairo radio or 710 stream of the game.
I have the Seahawks app, and I don't get Steve on there.
Well, do you just have a radio?
I know. I got see this, the Verizon.
Yeah.
But then I get a chance to watch it on television.
If you click through, I don't remember exact steps, but yeah, you can eventually find the radio.
I want to Steve Ravel.
Right.
I know those other guys.
I'll help you with it later.
Huh, Tom?
But if you have an old-fashioned radio, if you're not using your phone, if you just have a radio, I get it on the radio easily.
Can we do another just full segment of technology and John?
No.
This is about the Seahawks.
We're getting to the fact that Charles... One of the Koch brothers, the only remaining Koch brother, said his partisanship was a mistake. So he was funding, what's the name of the organization that he and his brother were doing, he and David Koch, something for America? And
I think it was called Dark Money.
No, yeah, that's what we had this year. We had this year with Michael Bloomberg spending $150-some million. Koch has come up with a new book. Charles Koch's come up with a new book. Wall Street Journal has the article. And he says, you know, I was wrong. Perhaps I added to the division and partisanship that is now inculcated the entire system. Our politics is so split and divided. The nation is so divided. He's going to try to find a new way around it, Tom. And so he has the book talking about, you know, how to reunite America under one cause.
Yeah, this is either refreshing or like, oh, is this one of these deathbed conversions? When I read this, it reminded me of Lee Atwater. John, you probably remember,
Lee Atwater.
A lot of people. He was the master of the dirty tricks. He was a really nasty but effective behind-the-scenes campaigner for conservative causes. He got, you know, cut his teeth with Richard Nixon. Anyway, he had a kind of deathbed conversion after being unbelievably successful throughout his life. I think he came down with cancer. It was something that eventually killed him. And in that last year of his life, he said that basically, you know, looking back, I'm appalled. This is not the way politics should be. I'm ashamed of, you know, what I helped do. It wasn't that he was giving, a pass to the other side. He just thinks that he did it better than anybody else. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't a good thing. That's sort of what it feels like for me to hear Charles Koch. And there's a part of me thinking, that's great that he really wants to unify. If you believe it, let's just take him at face value.
Right.
If you believe that, he says, in retrospect, I probably contributed to the kind of the nasty partisanship that we've now sort of become used to, unfortunately. And I'd like to, you know, work together with, you know, labor and business and Democrats and progressives and see if we can find common cause. I'm all for that if you think that's, you know, if it's true and if it's believable. There are a lot of people that are still skeptical, but still, I'd rather have a deathbed conversion than none at all, I suppose.
I have seen more stories about older people, you get into your 80s and stuff, that they really, and this, I'm not doing this in a sort of, this is not to be dismissive, but it's soft. They cry more easily. George Bush Sr., talked about he could not get through an episode of Scooby-Doo or something without crying. But as you get emotional, as you get older, your estrogen levels change and everything. I saw Tom Brokaw on some clip the other day weeping. I mean, just couldn't control himself, talking about the fact that if I was one shade darker, I wouldn't have the opportunity I have. And first, are you all right, Tom? and same thing, even Barry Goldwater got all kind of weird and weepy near the end of his life. And here's Koch at 85 years old looking back and thinking, maybe I'm part of the reason there is so many problems. He funded his ideas. He put his money behind ideas. He supported candidates that had the ideas of more sort of a libertarian point of view, which at times libertarians can appear to be sort of cutthroat because it really is, you know, it's not quite Darwinian, but it's don't have the oppressive arm of the government on top, removing rights from people, allow people to take more responsibility for their lives and their choices and the risk that they take. But Koch has written with this other guy saying, I'm going to try to, what is he going to do, right or wrong somehow, and start spending money somewhere else?
Yeah, well, it's called Believe in People, Bottom-Up Solutions for a Top-Down World. They say part mea culpa, part self-help guide, and part roadmap toward a libertarian American. And he just talks about how that we, instead of, it's a bit like, and this is why I think you're maybe a little suspicious, it can sound a little namby-pamby, a bit like Joe Biden's in effect acceptance speech or whatever he gave in Delaware a few days after the election when it was called, that, you know, you're not my enemy. I think it was Bob Dole said, you know, he's my opponent, but not my enemy. We're all Americans, that maybe we can all work together. Now, that might be pie in the sky, but I also think this is another thing. Do we, because, you're older, do we discount it because, well, you only came up with that when you're older? That those of us who aren't that old think, well, that's just an old man's weakness, or that's an old man's softness. You know, look at him crying, all this. That might be the case.
I got nothing wrong with old people crying or anybody crying.
It sure sounds like
it. No, it's not a problem. I was just pointing it out, Tom. That's
yes, okay, well, fair enough.
All right.
And then the question is, do we discount it just because he's an old man? If he had professed the same philosophy at 45, which you're right to suspect that he never would have, but what is it about getting older? A lot of people also get more religious when they get older.
That's true.
And that's because they're getting, now, do we discount that? Because, well, that's just because they're afraid of dying, and they, just in case there's an afterlife that's not going to look too good, they suddenly have these deathbed confessions and all that. Do you look cynically at that, or do you look at that as received wisdom, that this is the kind of earned wisdom that all of us have at that age when we realize that, what was I so, I mean, most of us, I think, you look back at something, let's say some argument you had 10 years ago, you look back and you go, God, really, that wasn't it? Really, was that worth, you know, losing, you know, that friendship over, or, you know, that marriage over, or whatever? It's like, really, was it that important? It seemed important at the time. You gain perspective, and with that, maybe some softness that makes younger people without that softness suspicious. That's all.
Here's the thing. So Coke was supporting policies that were more free market than government control, right?
Yes.
So that's considered, right. Now he looks back on it and goes, oh, maybe that's not good. Will people that have been advocating for more redistribution of wealth from the private sector to the public sector for redistribution to power positions in order to stay in office, i.e. Bernie Sanders, will Bernie Sanders, when he turns 80 in a couple of minutes, will he look back and say, you know what? Maybe I shouldn't ask for so much money to be taken from the people that have earned it and then to the control of people that have earned it. Will he eventually get to that point? I don't see many. Like Ted Kennedy, I don't remember him flipping around and going, well, maybe we took too much from the producers.
No, but Ted Kennedy worked. He was famous for working. I forget now, was it with Newt Gingrich or somebody?
He did reach across the aisle. It was Kennedy something or other.
Yes, and it was like phenomenal. And he managed to get through something. Well, I don't know if it was an education or healthcare or something, but, I mean, he really could do that. Now, the difference between Coke and Bernie Sanders, because I don't see that happening with Bernie Sanders, is Bernie Sanders hasn't won the day. Charles Coke, in effect, has won the day. He sort of admits that a lot of things that he wanted, he got.
Yeah, okay.
But then he realizes, oh, now that I've gotten what I wanted, I have some regrets. If Bernie Sanders suddenly won the day, he might then say, well, you know, this socialism might be a little, maybe we ought to bring it in a little bit.
I got it. So he hasn't crossed the finish line yet.
That's right. Well, he hasn't won yet. You know, so he's got the fight. If he ended up, winning, then he might have a few regrets.
Yeah. It was Kennedy and McCain had a real close relationship.
Is that right? Yeah.
Remember, they did an immigration bill together.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Tracy Taylor, how you doing? Used to be the old expression, Tom, was so goes Ohio, goes the country, right? Because Ohio is always,
right.
Ohio was always picking who the next president was. So apparently there were, what, 17 places, like little counties?
19 counties across this country, this great country, that had properly, the majority in their vote had indeed been the majority vote of the country since 1980.
Mm-hmm. And this year knocked out almost all of them, all of them, right?
18 of the 19 counties across the country lost their bellwether status, and the only one who attained its status was Washington's own Clallam County.
Mm.
Now, if you're not familiar with Clallam County, that's Port Angeles is like the biggest city up there, so the north west part of the state, and it went for Biden, and it was close, as a good bellwether county should be. It's like 52-48 Biden over Trump. But that was the only one of those 19 that actually went with Biden.
Yeah. So it's Port Angeles and Sequim and Forks. They're the only ones that are still picking it right since 1980. I don't know what they did prior to Reagan, but they've been getting it right ever since. So now everybody else falls out of play. And that's they will be the ones to be watching in 4 years.
All the cable networks will be there. By the way, Indiana's Vigo County, they also fell for the list. They had gotten all 16 elections right since 1956. So that's a lot more longer ago. And since 1880, they've only got three wrong. This was the third one they got wrong. But right now, Clallam County is the only standing champ.
Although
the reigning
champ. There are still counties in eastern Washington that are waiting for the election to be overturned, Tom, and then they say that they will be the new bellwether.
That's right. In fact, here's another a great statistic. In 1980, 391 counties were considered landslide territory. That means that one side beat the other side by more than 20 points.
Yeah.
So in 1980, 391. This time out, almost 1,500 counties were landslide. Just shows you how partisan the country has become.
Tracy Taylor.
Yes, sir.
Everybody's stuck in the traffic, regardless of liberal or conservative, right?
True. Yes, okay, very true. All in there together.